The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Welcome to our show. I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Each week, Heidi and I invite you to join us and our inspirational guests as we discuss stories of loss, hope, and recovery. These shows are brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation, whose mission it is to promote healing after loss, and by listeners like you. We also invite you to join our Open to Hope family by visiting our websites, blogs, and YouTube channel, where you will find inspirational articles, poetry, grieving tips, and other resources to support you on your journey of hope, loss, and recovery. If you're listening to our Thursday live internet show, please join Heidi and me on the show by calling our toll-free number, 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792 with questions or comments regarding the losses in your life. These shows are archived on our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. All shows can be downloaded on iTunes, and some transcripts are available on thegriefblog.com. Well, Heidi, good morning.
Morning, Mom.
I've got some great guests today. We're going to be talking a little bit about dealing with loss and survival, and we're going to have on the show Dr. Catherine Stengel, widow and author of November Rose, and Michelle Longo-Etter. Michelle's a bereaved mom and author of Salt in Our Blood. Well, Heidi, before we introduce our guests, I wanted to talk a little bit with everyone about, first of all, make sure you get our newsletter. If you like our shows and you want to know what we're going to be doing next month, get our newsletter and we'll have the shows listed. We also have articles in there and all sorts of things that are going on with the foundation site. And also, you can go to our websites, and we're interested in having people who like to write. If you want to write for us, go to the Open to Hope Foundation website, and you'll see Write for Us. You can hit on that. You can go to the Grief Blog site, where you can make comments on articles, write about your story, give us your story, and we answer all of those things that come in through the Grief Blog. So if you've got some issues you want to talk about, send them off to us at the Grief Blog.
Also, I also wanted to say that with the newsletter's free, and you can just go on our Open to Hope site and sign up to receive it. So it doesn't cost you anything, and we'll send it to you.
Absolutely. And then don't forget our new YouTube site. We're putting things on constantly. And then also we want to say that we've got our donation button there. We pay for these shows for all of our sites and everything. And so if you would like to donate to us any amount of money, we would be very happy to have you do that, to have this cause go along and to honor your loved ones that have passed on.
And I want to say something else about the YouTube site. I just put up our newest YouTube, which is Donna Sherman, Dr. Donna Sherman, and she runs the Dougie Center, which is a very large bereavement center on the West Coast, and she gives you invaluable information about how to help children through the grief process.
That's great, and you can also see Heidi on it because you interviewed her, right?
Right, I interviewed her, and she'll give you a lot of information that's very hands-on and very practical. And like I said, she runs a bereavement center, and she talks all over the country and helps people open up bereavement centers.
Right, and you can go to youtube.com/opentohope. to get directly to that, or you can go through our sites. Well, Heidi, I wanted to just mention the fact that it is graduation time.
Yes, yes, definitely. There's a lot of people graduating
and
all over New York.
It can be really tough time of year.
It can be. I mean, I was just talking with somebody that lost her brother, and he was supposed to graduate from college this year, and it's been a really stressful and very sad for her family, because not only was he supposed to graduate, but they're seeing all his friends that are graduating and have graduated, and that brings up a lot of loss.
Absolutely. So we want you to think about taking care of yourself and what you can do during that graduation. I remember we talked to a school teacher on the show whose child was supposed to graduate this year, and she, I think through the course of the show, she gave herself permission not to go, mm-hmm. even though she was a teacher at that school.
Right, and even if your child isn't graduating or your sibling, sometimes they're graduating to another grade. And so sometimes that's, they're going from elementary school to middle school or middle school to high school, and those are big life transitions, and they're causes for celebration. But when somebody dies, it's bittersweet. It's sad because that person is no longer here.
Absolutely. And brings up something for me, Heidi. I'm going to my grandson's graduation from eighth grade, and he is named after your brother.
And he looks so much like him. It is so odd to me and ironic that he was the grandchild. I mean, my mom has 10 grandkids, and he was the grandchild that was named after Scott, and he definitely looks the most like Scott.
Yeah, so that is a joyous time for us, but a time to contemplate a little bit, too. So it's always good to be prepared for these things so they don't kind of hit you on the head. Well, Heidi, you want to introduce our guest today?
Sure, I'd like to. I'd love to. Our topic today is dealing with loss and survival, and as you said, Mom, our first guest is Dr. Catherine Stengel. Dr. Catherine Stengel lost her husband at age 33 and was left with two young children. She is the author of November Rose, A Speech on Death, a personal yet philosophical book on death, love, and survival, the stigmatization of the survivor and the survivor's search for a new identity. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. How are you, Heidi and Gloria?
Great, and it's great to have you on the show. We were talking a little bit before we came on the show about the fact that Catherine is originally from Germany. Were you in Germany when your husband died? And
well, it was a little bit more complicated. I had a teaching position in Seattle, and he had two. He was sick 2 years before he died. They discovered colon cancer that had spread to the liver already, so it was last stage, basically.
Wow, and what a shock.
So we were both devoted to our intellectual life as well as our private lives, and that brought us to Seattle. And when he died, we flew back to Germany, so he died in Munich. But then I went back to Seattle, actually, and with my two children, and had to go back teaching.
Now, how many years ago was this that he died?
That was in 2000.
And one. So you were quite the childhood sweethearts, right?
Yeah, we were.
And what was his name, by the way?
Felix.
Felix?
Felix, yes.
Felix. So you were quite the childhood sweethearts,
yeah,
right?
We met when we were 17 and moved together when we were 18, and then had two children.
And you also separated and went to graduate school. I mean, got your... But didn't you go on different...
study abroad.
Yeah, we studied abroad, but, we didn't miss... I think we didn't spend more than 2 weeks apart, even when we were in different countries. I studied in Belgium for a year. He studied in Italy for a year. And then we both went through our PhDs while he was actually sick. So that was...
Oh, my goodness.
...was a big challenge. And he finished with, I think after his first chemotherapy treatment, he had his defense and he did fabulous. So that was, very challenging. But as it is, we all go through these phases in life, and somewhere energy comes from some bottom of our hearts and our existence that helps us to cope with these phases.
Well, some of the widows that we've had on the show, and you're remarried, right?
I'm remarried, yeah.
We'll talk about that a little later, but some of the widows that we've had on the show have said that it was a shock to be such a young widow, mm-hmm. that there really weren't that many people to support them, because you weren't supposed to be a widow when you were, that age.
That is true, and I told Heidi it's very ironic, because you get these brochures that are gestures from the state to help you cope with it, and on it are these pictures of really much older women. Mm-hmm. So it is, you get your retirement funds and things like that, and it's very strange. And it's usually in a doctor's office when it really hits you. The first time you go back to visit a doctor, you have to make that cross as widowed. And that's when it really got to me, because I hardly could do that. I somehow didn't feel like that's the right cross to put there somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to say single, married, or widowed, and I hardly could do it at that time.
And you had these kids. How old were the children?
When my first husband died, they were 5 and 7.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you had to think about making a living.
I had to think about making a living. I had some help. I was fortunate I had some help from my family, but I definitely, I had to think about how to do this all by myself at that point.
To be a single parent to two little boys.
But I had, wonderful support from my family and from also my now husband, Michael, who was wonderful through that time. He was a very old friend of myself and my first husband.
Ah, so he was able to help you. How were the financial challenges? What were your biggest challenges to begin with?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question, because it's so big that I don't know which one was the biggest. The biggest was just to get from day to day, take it every day and move on. And I think, what helped me a lot is that I allowed myself to really live my emotions. So I just, cried all the way to the university I taught, and I cried all the way back. And I didn't try to put on a straight face or, pretend that I'm happy or do so. I just lived with the waves, and I think that helped a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're coming up on break right now, and I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley, and we're talking to Dr. Catherine Stengel about dealing with loss and survival. Please stay tuned to hear more as we talk about her experiences and also about her teaching and her book and her Upper West Side Philosophers Incorporated that she has started. You can reach us through the blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the Open to Hope Foundation website. Please stay tuned for more.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
This is Dr. Heidi Horsley. Just a reminder that Healing the Grieving Heart Internet Radio and TheGriefBlog.com are sponsored by the Open to Hope Foundation, a nonprofit web-based foundation whose mission is to help bereaved individuals cope with their pain and find hope in their future. My mom and I hope you will visit our foundation website at www.opentohope.com and become a part of our caring community.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. We're here today with Dr. Catherine Stengel, author of November Rose, talking about dealing with loss and survival. Welcome back to the show, Catherine and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, Catherine, you are a working philosopher, right?
That's right.
And what does that mean? And tell us about your book, because I think your book is very connected into that and your organization, Westside Philosophers.
That's very right. Actually, the book was really my professional call in a certain sense. As I said, when my first husband was sick with colon cancer and died when my two children were very young, and I was a philosopher at that time already, but, studying at the university, finishing my PhD, and I always thought, you know, as philosophers, we deal with the most existential questions in life, and I realized that most often philosophers think only about their own death. That's what they're occupied with. And there's actually this famous saying that says to philosophize is to learn how to die.
Ah.
So to prepare for your own death.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, you know what, the real problem in life is to prepare for the death of the others, of the ones that you love.
And surviving it.
And surviving that. And so I thought, there's just not one real book out there, a philosophical book that looks at it from that philosophical, existential, human perspective and deals with these questions, what it means to really survive the death of a beloved and to live with that death when death becomes your daily companion, basically, and the loss of the loved ones is something that changes your whole life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how would people get your book, November Rose?
They will get it in any bookstore. They'll get it on Amazon.com. They find more information on our website, which is www.westside-philosophers.com. And we, you know, being an active philosopher, I also decided, you know, we started that Center for Philosophy here, the Upper West Side Philosophers in New York, and I wanted to open up a place where people can come to who really want to philosophize, who want to think philosophically, just like Socrates did. You know, he was available for everybody. He wasn't locked up in some university, or he was just there for people who really like to think through life philosophically.
Oh, great. Now, if people want to have some thoughts that they want to share with you, could they get a hold of you?
Sure. I mean, they find all of our contacts on the web page. If they just Google Upper West Side Philosophers, they find everything, and they can write me an email. Our email is on there, westsidephilosophers@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to talk and write to people and answer questions, whatever questions they have.
Right. Heidi, did you have something you wanted to ask her?
Yes, I did. You know, you talked a little while ago, Catherine, about death becoming your daily companion, which I totally agree with, and with that in mind, you say something in the book about how death is a turning point in life. So how do we go from death becoming our daily companion to having death as a turning point and not only surviving but finding hope again? Because I know that's what you've done.
That's, of course, a very profound and deep question. As we all know, you and me and Gloria, we all went through that there is not really a recipe for, you know, how to, as I say in my book, to love yourself back into life. I don't want to say to move on, because there's nothing to leave behind.
I like that, to love yourself back into life.
It's really, you carry it with you, and I think it sounds like I'm contradicting myself, but I'm not. What is important here is that you have been left by someone and you didn't want to be left. You have been basically deserted by someone you loved so much, and they didn't want to leave you either, but that's just a fact. And I think what is such a crucial point that I experience as a crucial point is that I had to say goodbye myself again. So you cannot just hope that it's going to pass. I think it's very important to find that moment when you can say goodbye to this person you loved, and that doesn't mean that you really let them go. When you can say goodbye, that only means that you can get over that point where death becomes that crucial, pivotal point of your last common shared experience. So what the dangers of surviving is that we hold on to this moment of death, and that becomes everything we're holding on to. And we think if we let go of death, we're going to let go of all of the beautiful memories and of the person we loved. But it's the opposite. When we can let go of the death, we fall into that love and into the in all of that energy that we shared with this person before they died.
Oh. Well, and you said that beautifully in the very, that is said in the last page of your book, and I loved that. I'm wondering if you could read that for us.
The very end?
Yes, where it says, or I can read it, where we're guided by love.
Mm-hmm. I would love to. That's the very last page of my book, November Rose, A Speech on Death. We were guided by love through the trials of illness and dying, and as we entered the sacred halls of death, we were wholly united in love. We left these sacred halls through different doors. Love remained, his as well as mine and ours, the love that has carried our family through all the storms and squalls of death back into life.
That's so beautiful, wonderfully said. Well, I wanted to ask you about the stigmatization of the survivor. What about that?
Yeah, well, that's something that's also, you know, at the core of my book is, and that's, of course, not for the newly bereaved. It's really what comes a little bit later, as I say, when the storm passes and you kind of, everybody gets, as I, in quotation marks, back to normal, because you're not going to get back to normal, but everybody around you is. And mm-hmm. that's when you realize how complex the social situation is for the survivor. And as a widow, you realize that in that way that wherever you show up, people, you're like the walking shadow of death. They look at you and they remember that you were two before somehow.
Right.
Like your better half literally is missing. And so you don't know how to deal with that because you're not seen as the person you are anymore. You are seen as that half person, that person, a creature of lack, as I call it. And that's very difficult to deal with.
And what did you say? You call it the creature what?
Of lack. Of, you know, like
you're
lacking.
Interesting. The creature of lack. Yeah. Oh, that's very interesting. How did you get over that? How do you deal with that? Or just do you recognize it and just plow through it? Or what do you suggest?
Yeah, I thought, I mean, my task as a philosopher was, I mean, for me it was very important to put that in words, to really
right.
think through this and think, like, what is actually happening to us and our environment and the people around us when someone beloved died? And so I tried to describe it first and foremost in my book, and I think that already is helpful to understand where everybody stands and why people do what they do or say what they say. I think that's already helpful.
Absolutely, because looking at it as part of the social system really says it's not about you.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm sure that I did, you know, and I'm not saying that I'm better because I experienced it or analyzed it, but I say I learned something important from my thinking through these complexities, and that is that I think that the grieving person is in a whole different territory. And what we usually don't do is we don't take that time to really visit them in their place, basically, where they are. We kind of try to do it fast, get through that uncomfortable emotional situation really fast. And I think that's one of the things I learned and how you can confront a grieving person is, first of all, take your time and also see where they are, because if they're in a happy mood, you don't have to, you know, plow right into, oh, you know, how do you feel? I mean, so there's not one recipe for all kinds of encounters, and that's what I think is the crucial point, that we have to develop more emotional skills, basically.
Mm-hmm. And what about the paradoxes of monogamy?
Well, that definitely is something I felt the hard way. It's and particularly, I mean, I don't know whether everybody would agree, but women have a harder time than men. Women, you know, you get a very double bind message from your relatives and also friends and acquaintances that basically the first thing is, you know, move on, and I hope you're going to date soon, hope you're going to find someone. But when you found someone, you get the other message that you're, you know, that you're basically not faithful.
It's too early.
Yeah. It's too early. It's not the right person. Or you hear this, you know, there's a lot of sentences like, well, you seem to be happy. like assuming that you can never be happy again.
Mm-hmm.
There's sentences, there's just all of these assumptions. Like I had this one friend call me on the anniversary of the death of my first husband, and she said, well, do you ever still talk about him? And I almost fell off the chair because I thought it was fitting. But I thought, like, I mean, I can't even talk to her anymore because that's just a question that is beyond.
It's beyond the beyond, especially when you have two children. And
yeah,
you know.
I mean, they're
Catherine, I would think it would be the assumption that you could replace him with another man
exactly.
When people aren't replaceable.
That's what I call the replacement theory. People really think it's like when one, and that's particular, I mean, sometimes that happens with children that die too. I heard that from a friend whose child died in the day it was born. And the same thing, like, oh, I'm glad you had another one.
Right,
like,
exactly so. Well, you know, it's gonna time to close our show. I think you have just whetted our appetite tremendously for people who've suffered loss to get your book, November Rose, and to, you know, think about these issues because it does become less personal. I love this philosophical point of view, don't you, Heidi?
Yes, it's wonderful.
It's great. Do you have one piece of quick advice that you want to give to folks out there, one last thought you want to leave them with?
Well, it almost sounds banal, but I think, you know, listen to yourself. Listen to and don't give too much about any other person's opinion, what you should do, what moment, what time, you know, when. Just try to listen to that voice because I think that voice you hear is not just you. It's really the love the person left with you and the love the person who died has for you, and that's what you hear, and that's a strong voice you can follow.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Catherine Stengel.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for that wonderful work you're doing for our community.
Thank you. Well, please stay tuned for more. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. Our topic today is dealing with loss and survival, and our second guest will be Michelle Longo Eder. She began a journal to record what daily life was like for her, and she lost a son, and she'll be in a fishing accident, and she will be talking about that. You can reach us through the blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the Open to Hope Foundation website. Please stay tuned for more.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, this is Dr. Heidi Horsley, host of Healing the Grieving Heart. Have you lost meaning and purpose in your life since your loved one died? Does each day feel like an effort? You do not have to go through this difficult time alone. As a bereaved sibling and licensed psychologist with over 15 years' experience, I will work with you in a collaborative, supportive way. If you live in the New York tri-state area, you can contact me at 917-338-6396 or email me at drheidihorsley@gmail.com. That's drheidihorsley@gmail.com. To learn more about my private practice, visit my website at www.drheidihorsley.com. Thank you. This is Dr. Heidi Horsley. Just a reminder that Healing the Grieving Heart, Internet Radio, and thegriefblog.com are sponsored by the Open to Hope Foundation, a nonprofit web-based foundation whose mission is to help bereaved individuals cope with their pain and find hope in their future. My mom and I hope you will visit our foundation website at www.opentohope.com and become a part of our caring community.
Hello, my name is Neil Chethick. I'm the executive editor for the Open to Hope Foundation and author of the book Father Loss, How Sons Deal with the Death of Their Dad. As editor of the foundation, it's my job to find writers for our website, writers who would like to contribute their articles, poetry, and personal stories about grief, loss, hope, and recovery. If you'd like to write for our website, please contact me. You can do that by visiting opentohope.com and click on the category Write for us. Then you can start bringing your words, your stories, to our fast-growing audience around the world.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're talking about dealing with loss and survival, and our second guest is Michelle Longo-Etter. Michelle Longo-Etter began a journal to record what daily life was like for her while her husband and sons were out commercial fishing. Personal tragedy struck in 2001 with the death of her son, Ben. Her book, Salt in Our Blood, The Memoir of a Fisherman's Wife, is an offer of healing to her family, her community, and to fishing families everywhere. Welcome to the show, Michelle, and welcome back, Gloria.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Michelle, it's great to have you on the show today. One of the things I picked up from your book, by the way, your book is so interesting, Salt in Our Blood, A Memoir of a Fisherman's Wife, because I don't think most of us really know what the fishing world and life is like at all. I didn't know at all, and I live in California, and I eat Dungeness crab, and I really never think about where they come from. And the fishing life, I didn't realize that it was such a fraternal life for men and such, like you say, you call it right, salt in their blood. So the book's very interesting, and it's interesting that you started this as a journal, before your son was killed, right?
That's right. In December 2000, I realized that we had a unique culture as fishermen's wives. There's a lot you hear about commercial fishing these days, but recognizing that as fishing families, we really did have a different kind of culture and what was going on behind it while our husbands and sons were at sea. And so I started a journal to tell about it, what our daily life was
like. Because you weren't from there, so it must have been kind of fascinating for you. I mean, you came from upstate New York, right?
Absolutely. And I went out to the West Coast to go to law school and then immediately moved down to the coast. And have lived on the ocean for the last 30-some-odd years.
And this is Oregon, right?
Right, and in Newport, Oregon. And I just kept a journal of the different things that I would do for our commercial fishing business. I'd cook for the boats. I'd run errands.
Plus your law practice.
Plus my law practice and fit it in all between and took care of the business and the books and the payroll and things like that. And really recognize that the women who were part of this industry, you know, we had our own story to tell. And as I worked, I had intended to end the book after a year. And then just when we got to December 2001, and it was the beginning of another crab season, we had two boats at the time, the fishing vessel Michelle Ann and the fishing vessel Nasika. And our oldest son, Ben, was just home from college, and both our sons had always fished with my husband, and Ben was on our fishing vessel, Nasika, and went out on the first day of crab season with three of our other crew members, and the vessel capsized.
For us who aren't even boating people means it.
It turned over, mm-hmm. And the cause of the accident was never actually determined by the Coast Guard. They determined it was a combination of potential factors, weather, a squall,
I think I read that sometimes the crab baskets, when they throw them off,
right,
destabilize the boat a little.
That's right. They can affect stability of the vessel. You've got crab pots piled on the deck of the boat, and as you're laying them into the ocean, sometimes it can cause a change in stability, and that is what we, you know, suspect combined with weather, you know, caused the accident. And what happened was the vessel capsized, and ironically, it was right out in front of our oceanfront home where the accident happened. And Ben, in addition to our son Ben's death, who was 21 at the time, we also three other crewmen died, Rob Thompson and Jared Hamrick and Steve Langlott. So we sustained, you know, experienced not only the death of our own son, but the death of three other people who were, you know, part of our fishing family, to speak. Mm-hmm. So it was extraordinarily traumatic when it happened.
You know, and there's another story here in my mind also reading your book is that you married your husband, Bob. He had two boys They're not your biological children, right?
That's right.
I think there's such a story here because for anybody out there who has adopted kids or who is a step-parent, reading your story is just as compelling as if they were your biological children. And reading your response to it and all that kind of thing, because I think sometimes people have some kind of an idea, and Heidi said it because she has an adopted daughter, when I was telling her the thought about it, that these kids are just as important to you as a biological child, and the reactions are, you know, very similar.
Thank you for making that point, too, because it was these boys, Ben and Dylan had no contact with their biological mother, and so I was mom. That was
well. I loved it. I loved when you were dating Bob, and when Ben is the one that died, said to you, "Can I call you mom?"
That's right. And I said, "Well, honey, let's wait until your dad and I get married." And he said, "Okay." And so this was a little boy who was desperate, for a mom. He was ready. He and Dylan and. Ben and Dylan were very, very close.
And they were 7 and 5, right?
Right. And Bob was just an extraordinary father. So I had this ready-made family of really beautiful people. And I think it's, thank you for mentioning it, as I said, because I think sometimes people do think that if you are a not the biological parent, that somehow the loss is greater for the biological parent. And I ran into some of that. And it was, that was a little tough to deal with sometimes, so I just said, well, people just don't understand what it's like to raise children biological or not.
And they don't realize that we don't have to be genetically linked to someone to love them with our hearts and souls. I mean, we love our spouses that way. Because I have a biological child and an adopted child, and people assume sometimes, like you're saying, that my love for my biological child must be deeper when that, in fact, is not my experience.
Thank you. Yeah, that's absolutely right. Ben and Dylan have always been my children, and they always will be.
And what I love to further punctuate that is reading what the notes that Ben sends you and that are in your book.
They're
fabulous.
It was wonderful. He was, in the first 6 months of the book, he was traveling in South America, and would send me emails, Mother's Day notes, and just questions he had of me as he was growing up and exploring things. And he was tremendously adventurous and curious, and his motto was learn, learn, learn. And that's how he lived his life. And I think you can see the closeness between us in those communications, and as well as the fact we, as all parents and children do, have conflict too, and that was a natural a part of life growing up with as the boys grew up into teenagers and young adults.
Yeah, it's really lovely, and I would recommend to everyone that they get Salt in Their Blood because it's so interesting about fishing, as well as a wonderful, compelling human story. Could you talk a little bit about how do you deal with these high-risk occupations? And I guess Bob went right out, that's his life, went up right out fishing again, right?
Well, Bob actually waited a couple of months before he went back out. Dylan, the accident happened December 11th, 2001, and the night of Christmas night, 2 weeks later, I remember Bob and Dylan came into the house, and Dylan looked at me, and he was 19 at the time, and he looked at me, and he said, "I'm going out fishing tonight on a crab trip." And I just, my eyeballs, and I just, shook, and then recognized that it was really important for Dylan. This is what he needed to do to begin to deal with it. And also, I think he just wanted to be away from everything that was going on at the house.
Also,
and so he went back out fishing 2 weeks after the accident, and that was.
I would think also there's a certain connection with his. There would be a certain connection with his brother when he was out at sea.
Absolutely, that he was with Ben when he was out there, and when he went out there on that trip, that they laid a wreath at sea, and Dylan wrote a letter to his brother and laid it. With the wreath in the sea, and that was how he said goodbye.
What a wonderful ritual, especially now you didn't have a body. Have they ever found his body?
No, the only, I'm hesitating here because it's a little bit hard to describe. The Ben's body was never found, or any of the either Jared's or Rob Thompson's, but there were pieces of a torso that washed up on the beach about a month later, and by DNA identification, they were able to identify that it was Steve Langlott. But the rest of neither Ben or the rest of our crew members, their bodies were never found.
That's kind of like the 9/11, right, Heidi? You've dealt with that a lot.
It does remind me. There's so many parallels because I've been working with firefighters, that firefighter families where the firefighter father died for the last 7 years. And, you know, these families often have they often have children that are also firefighters. And when their fathers died, they went back out and did what they love, what gave them passion and meaning. And their thought is, you know, even though it's a high-risk job, they absolutely love what they're doing, and they're committed to it, and it's part of a culture and part of a family.
That's exactly right. And Bob then did return to fishing in 2002 after a couple of months. And
how was it for him to go out the first time?
I'm sure it was very difficult. There were, you know, some things that we didn't talk a lot about at that time, but I knew he needed to go back out, and when he was ready, he went.
You know, I thought about that. What a community out there. It's those are the people that know, because in your book you say that 25 men have died since 1992 there in accidents.
It's the fishing community and our community at large is just extremely supportive, and that's what really got us through, you know, the first couple of months and also all these years, because people understand, as, you know, as Heidi would say, just like in the firefighting community, that people go back to that where they find the most peace and what is part of, you know, who they are. And it is part of who Bob is, to go back out on the ocean and to do what he loves to do. And I'm glad that, you know, he has done that.
And, you know, I think that for everybody out there, it is scary. I mean, it is scary. My son was killed in an automobile accident. It was scary for me to have my daughters in a car.
That's right.
You know, it is a scary thing that you do have to kind of give up and let go, and where it's a whole occupation, it's got to be, you know, you really have to take a big breath.
Well, one of the things that I've done is, when you look at the national statistics, commercial fishing is the number one most dangerous occupation in terms of lives lost each year. And the Oregon Dungeness crab fishery has been identified by the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health as being the most dangerous between a period of time. The years flip my mind, but over a six-year period of time, there were the most fatalities in that fishery. And so part of my healing has been to address that issue with the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission and to ask them to require that every vessel have a voluntary safety inspection by the Coast Guard before it is allowed to go out crabbing each season. Mm-hmm. And I have the support in doing this from not only the 13th District of the U.S. Coast Guard, which covers Washington, Oregon, and California. The Admiral has written to the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission supporting this. But I also now serve on the National Fishing Vessel Safety Advisory Committee, and they have also written a letter in support to require voluntary vessel safety inspections before a vessel goes to sea to go crabbing. And that's one of the ways that I have taken what has happened, and you know, seeing that there's a difference that I can make.
That's great. You know. And we need to go to break now, but when
sure.
we come back to break, I want to follow up on that a little bit about the outreach and making meaning out of loss. We're talking to Michelle Longo-Eder, and we're talking about dealing with loss and survival. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. You can reach us through thegriefblog.com as well as the Open to Hope Foundation. Please stay tuned for more.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
Hello, I'm Eric Kippel, former quarterback of the Detroit Lions and outreach coordinator of the University of Michigan Depression Center. It gives me great pleasure to announce the publication of my autobiography, Real Men Do Cry, a quarterback's inspiring story of tackling depression and surviving suicide loss, written with Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley and published by Quality of Life. Real Men Do Cry takes you on my journey of fame and fortune to unbearable pain and depression following the death of my 15-year-old son, Jeff, and gives practical information on the warning signs and risks of depression. My story ends with an uplifting message of hope and recovery. I have faith that if I have made it, you can too. You can visit my website to learn more about my book at erichippel.com and more about depression on depressioncenter.org. Thank you.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're talking about dealing with loss and survival with our second guest, Michelle Longo-Eder, author of Salt in Our Blood, The Memoir of a Fisherman's Wife. Welcome back to the show, Michelle, and welcome back, Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, Michelle, we were talking a little bit about a break, and I don't want to lose this thought, is that you are going to be keynote speaker at the Compassionate Friends National Conference in Portland, Oregon, and the conference starts on August 7th and goes through Sunday the 9th. It's going to be a fantastic conference. Heidi and I will be there speaking, and Michelle, we're going to look forward to meeting you there.
I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm so honored to be asked to speak at the Friday morning opening keynote. And not only that, I'm looking forward to all of the workshops, meeting you, and just taking advantage of every opportunity to learn more about how other people have experienced, dealt with, and share in a community of people that are so uniquely able to understand what our lives have been like over the last 7-8 years.
Right. Well, Heidi, do you want to put in a word for Dylan to come? Ben's brother.
I don't know where he is as far as his feelings about it, but we're all on our own journeys. I would just say that the conference itself is a very, very powerful experience, and like you said, Michelle, it's so powerful to be in a room full of 1,500 people that have all either experienced the death of a child or the death of a sibling, and it transcends words because you know that the people in that room understand where you've been and what you've been going through. And it also offers a lot of hope for people that are further down the road, like my mom and I, that you will not only survive, but you will find hope again. So it's great, and tell Dylan if he wants to join me, I'll be there with the siblings.
I really appreciate that, Dr. Heidi, because I think that the largest gap, if you will, or where I felt at a loss in terms of what I could do or how I could do more was in terms of, you know, sibling loss. I mean, losing a brother with whom Dylan was extraordinarily close. And, yeah, I'm careful not to, you know, try not to violate Dylan's privacy, but it's whether it's Dylan or any other person like yourself or any other child or an adult who has lost a brother or sister, that it doesn't get as much attention. And I think the work that you do is huge to bring attention to it. And I will learn a great deal more when I'm there.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. In fact, I just did a YouTube video on this very topic. It's on sibling loss, and it's on the fact that we often, as grief siblings, feel unacknowledged and invalidated, and just that acknowledgement is often all we really need.
So I remember I was so grateful when Ben died for all of the people who individually wrote cards to Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't to, it wasn't just addressed to Bob and myself and Dylan, that they wrote separate notes to Dylan acknowledging that his loss, his grief, how he was feeling was his own and didn't, you know, wasn't a group loss. And I was always grateful and for the sensitivity of people who understood that.
Well, that is a caring community, because that says something about the fishing community, because we don't hear that often, do we, Heidi?
Absolutely not. I had one condolence card.
Yeah.
My parents have thousands. So, yes, and it means so much to us as siblings that we get our own personal cards.
That's right.
You said.
Now, talk about the website for Ben.
Mm-hmm.
The website is www.beneder, B-E-N-E-D-E-R, .org. And it was a website that Ben's friend from Reed College, Andy Rumbach, I think of him so fondly, started, and I gave photos and posted on there photos of our family and Ben growing up through different stages and our family, as well as some of Ben's writings from when he was a child in high school and college, and memories that people have written about. When Ben died and people asked what could they do, what I said to them is, please write down a memory. I don't need another casserole. If you can write down a moment, a day, anything that you remember that you and Ben interacted with. And that's what they did. And those were the greatest gifts that I received.
And by the way, it's never too late to do that. I say to people, if it's been 15 years and you want to get those memories, send it out to your friends and say, you know, it's a 15-year anniversary and I'm just putting a little something together. If you could write a memory, it would be great.
Absolutely.
You know, and after 26 years, I just got a memory on Facebook from someone about Scott.
Yes.
And I really appreciated it.
And that I still receive memories about Ben. There's a guest book on his website, and I still get emails there. I still run into people that tell us, you know, a special story that we haven't heard before. And anything about our son is anything is special to us. You know,
that's great. Well, tell people how they can get your book.
It's available on www.saltinourblood.com, and it's also available on Amazon. And if you check with your independent bookseller and you want to support your local independent bookstore, you can go in and ask for it, and they can order it for you if it's not already available, and it'll be there in a day or two.
All right. And do you have one parting thought you want to leave our audience with, Michelle?
I think that sometimes a parent's greatest fear is, for me anyway, if I can only speak for myself, is that their child will be forgotten. And even though I know that he won't be, that he lives on in so many lives, his spirit and thoughts, he touched so many people in his life, I still have that feeling. And so I continue to bring him up and talk about them comfortably and naturally and ask people for their remembrances and be comfortable and to not be shy about that, because there is a never-ending hunger for it. And to also spread Ben's message. Ben had, in his life, there were certain things that were so important to him, and one of them was learn, learn, learn. And he just had this voracious appetite. And so what my husband and I and Dylan, too, have all tried to do is to continue his message in life to people, is to recognize that and live that way as well. And so I think that that's a way that we honor him. And so to find that special way that will be unique to everyone.
Find a uniqueness to your child. That's great.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Michelle. And we want to thank both our guests, Catherine and Michelle, for being on the show. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. And our next guest next week will be Ann Hamilton, teacher and playwright, and Carlos Sofka, and songwriter David Lamonte. This show is archived on our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the Compassionate Friends website. Remember, you need not walk alone. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley. Catherine and Michelle, thank you for all you do to help all of us deal with loss and survival.
Dr. Heidi and Dr. Gloria, thank you very much for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.